outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson. Welcome back to The God Journey and this continuing story of what happened to Sarah and I and how we've been finding our way into God's light and life at this season of our journey. If you haven't heard the first two, you might want to go back and pick that up, or you could well be lost. Last week we stopped and caught up with Sarah a bit. This week we're going to finish the conversation Kyle and I started a couple of weeks ago, and then we'll bring Sarah back into the conversation. And that'll kind of bounce between the two until we find that connection that allows us to share the story together of God's light and life in our life. Let's go. But Therese went through the traumatic brain, boom, 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 and described, I understood my wife better from that 20 minutes than any decade that we have lived together.
Yeah.
It just, this goes back to Russia and what happened there. This is something. And she said, yeah. And she said three things that were very, again, self-serving but helpful. Wayne, you could have been the perfect husband, and I know you're not, but you could have been, and this would have happened to you. And I'm like, well, what? That didn't even make sense to me.
Yeah.
And she said, and you got to realize, number one, number two, this isn't personal. Okay, hold it. It sort of feels personal. Yeah. I got home. There's a letter. There's a traumatized dog. There's an empty house. There's no warning, hint that was coming my way. This does feel personal. See, it's not personal. See, the other thing you got to stop looking for is for a logical reason why Sarah did this.
Yes.
Not in her letter, not anywhere. There's no logical reason. So now I'm even more lost than ever. But now I have some way to hold this. And I talked to you about it when I got off the phone. And that was on a Tuesday. You were coming out on that Friday to spend a weekend with me. And it was just a diversion. It was just a good friend. Let me come out. Yeah. We're going to play golf. We're going to hang out. We're going to do whatever. And we had a chance to talk about it. You understand the traumatic brain much better than I do. And so I rehearsed some of those things and you were affirmative, all those. I don't know why you didn't tell me those before, Kyle. She outlined Sarah's story, not even knowing Sarah and not even knowing that she was a victim of trauma. At this point, Sarah doesn't know it. I don't know it. And she reads me the whole thing. And why she said, you've got to take the person out who loves you the most. And that just, all three things, I'm going, okay, there's, so she told me about the body keeps the score. I read it in 2 days. I've got to find out how all those things she said could be true in my relationship with Sarah.
I really want to dialogue a little bit more with you about that internal voice. Because that was something that you and I really got into a lot over that period of time, especially those first 3-4 weeks of the fool versus trusting the love, trusting the voice of truth, and how to recognize the difference, and how is it even worth me being seen as the fool? Is it worth me continuing to love and being revealed to the world as the fool, but I still held love for Sarah?
I think it's why even that chart we do with this transformational love thing that we've been building. I mean, we're building that chart while I'm going through the reality of that. So there's these reveals, these doves. Is that God? Not God. I'm playing the fool. That's the argument against it. And to me, there's always a risk to follow God. There is. Yeah. We can't take all the risk out of it.
Yeah.
We never know with 100% certainty that these doves, for all I know, I mean, once Sarah came back around here, I've seen them once since.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't know if they're angels. I've at one point thought, man, were that angels in feathers flying around here? Because I make fun of angel feathers, but might have been true. I think that's the journey right there. God seems to be saying this. My friends I talk to say, yeah, that makes the most sense to me. There's the fearful part of Wayne that's like, man, what if she doesn't come back? Then I'm really playing the fool. That was all. It was very, very difficult. But everything God's ever said to me, I've got more to teach if you walk away and if you stay.
Yeah.
It's always a risk. Am I willing? And this is what I asked, am I willing to love Sarah longer even if she doesn't come back? And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Loving a woman well her whole life may mean that I only love her from a distance, but can I still love her well from a distance? So there was never even, I had one therapist, my kids were wanting me to get a therapist, and I just like, I've never had one, don't know what, you know, just never felt the need for one. So I was interviewing a couple, and I told him what was going on, blah, blah. And he said, well, tell me, you know, and I was telling him, I'm holding out. I feel like this isn't Sarah, that she's coming back someday. And he said, you know what? You've chosen the hardest thing. 99% of men get left that way, and they're already looking for someone else. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, well, that's not in my heart even. It wasn't even like, you know, I should stay with Sarah after all I committed to her. I mean, this is clearly scriptural grounds, abandonment, whatever. I don't need to do this to fulfill any scriptural mandate. I thought of that quote we used about that judge when that woman said, I betrayed you and I lied about you. And he said, yeah, whatever made you think that would change my opinion of you?
Yeah.
And I thought about that because I'm reading Sarah's note and I know there's things in here that aren't true. And there's some things that are. There's nobody on the planet that's a perfect husband. So things in here that are true? Yeah, there are weaknesses in my life, but Sarah's always carried my weaknesses well. I carry hers well. That's all part of being married. You don't marry a perfect creature.
No.
But now they're all being used as, even things that Sarah held so well for me are now used as clubs to beat me over the head with. And oh my gosh. But at the end of it, when she said, I know you're angry, I'm going, I'm not angry. Why do you think this would change my opinion of you? It doesn't. My love for Sarah deepened reading that letter, to be honest. It was, yes, am I defensive? And am I thinking, this is not fair. I said that a million times. This is not fair. It's not fair. She walks away. We've never had if we'd had a big fight before I left, if I'd had an affair and she found out about it, if I did any of those things, then this makes a little more sense to me. If it's, you're just a disgusting human being, which she didn't say that in the letter, but that's my takeaway. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, all of these things have made me disgusting to her. Mm. And it's not fair. It's not fair we didn't get a chance to talk about them. It's not fair that I didn't get a clue that this was going on. And I told God, it's not fair. And it was, did you tell me I could do this? Did you tell me? And I remember saying to Lewis, in fact, we took her to the airport that Monday. Mm-hmm. And I already spent a little bit of time with Sarah over the weekend, which we'll talk about when we get next time when Sarah's here. But driving back, I told her, I was sitting there and I'm just crying. I said, I don't understand. I did after the last, I was a very selfish young man when we first got married. I love Sarah because of everything she was to me, did to me, and how beautiful she made my world. So, but as God's been growing me up, particularly in the living loved phase of my life, I've become a better lover. Loving Sarah makes me a better person. I've said that to her. And riding back from the airport with Lewis, and I was crying. I was just saying, the last 10 years, I've tried. I've done everything I know to do to serve her, connect with her heart, let things be. I've done everything. And the next thought in my head was, then it wasn't yours to do.
Mm.
And I just, you know, where I'm feeling like a failure, it's like, I think Jesus was underscoring, you were attempting the impossible. This was not yours to do. And it kind of told me why God needed her away to himself. And then you and one other person, in fact, another person first told me, they had the scripture on their heart for Sarah from Hosea 2, which we also covered in a previous podcast about, I'll call her away into the desert and then I'll...
First, it's, I will hem her in, and then therefore I will allure her into the desert, and there I will speak tenderly to her. I will return her vineyards, and I will make the valley of trouble a doorway of hope.
Yeah. So someone gave me that scripture, or there's the word tender again for me. I went, whoa, tender. That's great. And then I mentioned it to you and you said, oh my gosh, that scripture has been in my heart too. And it was a key one in your... which we do not to talk about.
Yeah.
So this is before Sarah and I are talking. I just sent her the scripture. I just said, here's the scripture. I think maybe. And so there were moments. But it was really clear. I think that's the day. This is Monday now. After I first began to, Sarah and I are finding a little bit of a way back to each other, though there's no hope that this marriage is going to be resurrected. But that I knew this was not mine to do. Mm. And I didn't feel so much like a failure, because up till then I'd felt like a huge failure. I'd failed to love Sarah well enough.
to be the healer in her life. And I wanted to be. And one of the things that the therapist that I talked to, the good one I talked to later, said, you take responsibility for a lot of stuff that isn't your responsibility. Mm. Please don't say that to me. This girl is my responsibility. And she goes, no, she's not.
For me, I think, just as we've talked and as I've walked through this journey with you and Sarah, there's a piece of it too at the end of Hosea 2 that says, in those days, you will no longer call me master, but beloved. And I think Sarah had known him as master. And we can, Sarah and I can talk about this more when she comes, but yeah. I think there was a shift. I think there has been a shift where she's known more master, and there's been a cultivation of beloved over these last, and in a way that you couldn't do, you couldn't offer it to her as her lover. You could, even then you couldn't offer it for her. It had to be God stepping in.
Yep. So those things really helped me, man, just saying that it really wasn't about me. It wasn't personal. Yeah. But it feels incredibly personal when your wife leaves you in the dead of night.
There's no way it couldn't.
With a note that says you're a creep. Gee, I became her Frankenstein. I mean, that turns out to be true.
Yeah.
I had become her Frankenstein through the advice of a therapist whom Sarah had completely lost any trust in her ability to make conclusions for her life. So she completely turned her life over to this therapist who decided without ever meeting me or talking to me that I was the problem and repainted our entire marriage history with Wayne is an abusive. She never uses that word in the letter, but you were here when I asked her. I said, you consider me abusive? And she said, yes.
Yeah.
And I went, how? I didn't go how then. I was just, I was devastated.
Yeah.
But then the next day I said, can I ask you how you consider me abusive? And it was something I didn't even do. It was an expectation she put on herself about me, but nothing I'd ever asked her or required of her.
Yeah.
And it was something as silly as being home for lunch at 12 noon because Wayne's coming off his intermittent fasting. And if I'm not there, he's going to be miserable too.
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's not how that works for me. But that's what she considered abusive. And so our whole marriage got painted with this, through the traumatized lens, as we'll see.
Yep.
And now Sarah and I are walking back through our whole marriage again, and we're repainting the colors back in there. And Sarah goes, yeah, no, that wasn't a problem at the time. No, that wasn't this. And we're restoring everything that we had that was good. At the same time, Sarah's going through some work that's helping her understand the most painful parts of her journey and finding healing and freedom from them. So that's just, I know this is difficult for Sarah. Sarah had one of those memory things last night that she's dealing with. And I held her for an hour or so, just prayed and talked. I mean, I hurt for what she goes through.
Yeah.
But I'm watching her. I feel like I'm standing in the middle of a miracle. I'm watching God resurrect a Sarah that got killed when she was 4 years old.
Yeah.
And God's revealing what's happening, what happened to her, and God's putting it in a place where it moves it from trauma. It's not happening to me. It just happened to me a long time ago. It's not happening to me now.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm standing in the middle of a miracle with her. We talk hours a day on what's going on. And I can't wait to talk about how this process is working for her because it's incredible.
Yeah. Wayne, I have to ask, what have you done with the anger? Because there's no – like in my mind, I cannot conceive – you go through all of this over the time that you have and not, whether it be the anger towards the injustice, the anger to like, what have you done with the emotion of anger in the midst of this? Has it ever been present for you? And if so, what has God done with it?
Not yet.
Okay.
One of the first people I talked to, a local Presbyterian pastor, is a good friend of mine. And I talked to him about it, and it was still, I mean, it was 4 days in.
Yeah.
And he looked at me at the end as we got ready to leave. He said, I want you to promise me something. I said, what's that? He says, when rage sets in, will you vent it on me? Mm. I'm going, what? He said, yeah, when you get really, really angry at what's happened to you, will you come and just vent it on me and let me heal that? Let me in that way. And I'm going, yes, I promise you, I'll do that.
Yeah.
It hasn't, I, you know, it's one of the stages, right? But
yeah,
the only anger I have is towards Sarah's previous therapist. And fortunately, when all this went down, both my kids said to Sarah, we're not comfortable with how your therapist is dictating your life. She shouldn't be doing that. And you need to find another therapist. And Sarah did, and found one that is a trauma specialist. So I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
When we talk about how our life got painted by someone who thought me a monster, who never met me, who set it up with Sarah that I was abusive. I've never yelled at Sarah. I don't have to yell at Sarah. I've never yelled at her. I've never forced her into a corner. I've never thrown anything at her. I've never been angry with her. But this lady painted, I'll give you one example, which is just, you know, this was probably a month before this whole thing happened. And we're at backyard. We've got a leak, which we get notice from the city. You've got a water leak somewhere because water's precious here in California. So we're out trying to find this leak, and we dig up a valve that's the cover's under dirt and dig it up. And then we're trying to get it open, and it's pinched in with a bunch of rocks. And I've got a screwdriver, so I'm cleaning out the rocks so I can pry the lid open. And I notice Sarah's on the other side of it, and she's got her fingernails in it trying to scrape rocks out. And I'm just, Sarah, don't. She says, what? I said, don't do that. I said, I'll be there in a minute. I'm 6 inches from her with the screwdriver. I'm coming around the corner. And yep. I said, just let me get it. And she goes, no, I can do this. And she's doing it. I said, stop it. And she looks at me and says, why would I stop? I said, you're going to hurt yourself. And she said, how am I going to hurt myself? I said, well, I'm going to hurt you if I have to. Her therapist painted that like I was going to drive that screwdriver into her skull. She didn't stop, which to me, it was just absurdist humor, which I love. It was just thinking, because I'm going to hurt you if you don't. Just please, I'm going to be there when we're done with this sentence, you know? She did stop, but that was in the letter as you threatened me with a screwdriver. Nah, come on, that's not fair. No, that's just humor. Will I ever use that humor again? I don't think so. Not on Sarah.
Yeah.
So I've been angry at her, but I have no relationship, no name, no – Sarah's not connected with her anymore. There's no way to do – I mean, I've had three therapists tell me you could sue her for malpractice. And Sarah has no desire for that, and I don't either. That's not going to hurt anything. She is retired, so she's not – if she was still in practice, I would want to – at least have a conversation with her to let her know how wrong she was.
Yeah.
But even that's an anger at just, I'm angry at what happened. I'm not seeking revenge of any kind on her.
Yeah.
I'm just glad Sarah sees to it now, but Sarah also is mixed, right? Cause Sarah's, this woman saved her life in some ways. I mean, by putting all her panicked responses onto an abusive husband, she could run from that.
Yeah.
And that may have saved her life. And now when we're saying, no, I'm not that guy, and she's saying that, now we found where the real trauma is.
Yeah.
And so it's healed everything about that letter. I mean, it's just healed it in Sarah.
Yeah.
And me too.
But she did have to externalize it, though. Like that, she had to.
She didn't have to get it. She could have just told me.
True.
But I don't like thinking this was the only way out. I would love, you know, if my son would have told me. He would, in Colorado, he knew.
Yeah.
So if you'd have told me, I would have sat down with my baby and I said, honey, what's going on? Because if you need to leave, I will help you leave. I will leave so you can stay here because this is your home. And I said that to her 10 years ago. I will make it easy for you. So there was that option in my heart that was not in her frame of reference. That's true. It was not.
Having had conversations with Sarah, I don't know if she would have had that conversation with you. I don't know if she would have gone through with what she felt like the Lord was asking her to do. I don't know if she would have let you help her in that process. I don't know. I mean,
I like to think though, you know, what coulda, woulda, shoulda, Aslan warned us, you know what? There's no value there. Sarah has a lot of those things where she'll go, what if, you know what? Here's where we are. This is happened.
Absolutely.
Now you and I get to manage this.
So I want to talk a little bit about community, because leading up to this, you'd said that you, and I remember having previous conversations with you years ago where you'd made the comment about how you didn't really feel like you needed a therapist because you had community. Hmm. What shifted? Like what, because you've had phenomenal community alongside of you, two of which are practicing mental health practitioners, but what shifted? What was different? That?
Well, I still don't think I need one.
Okay, that's fine.
No, I mean, I'm meeting with one out of this great pain. How am I going to go without Sarah? That's how it started. And then, you know, she says to me last week, why are we doing this? And I'm going, I don't know. I keep trying to come up with something that you could help me manage. I can't find it. I don't have trauma here. I don't have trauma over what Sarah did. I just don't. And so I've enjoyed talking to her. I've enjoyed her expertise about trauma.
Yeah.
So I've enjoyed hearing that. It's helped equip me to be not Sarah's fixer. I'm not, man. I'm clearly not. I'm just her cheerleader. I'm in her life. Tell me what you need from me right now, baby. And what's sad to me, I talked to a lady a couple of weeks ago. I had some very deep trauma in her childhood. She's in her 70s, never really had it worked out with somebody experienced in trauma, but sexual trauma at 8, 11, 13, never worked it out. And I just said, man, how supportive would your husband be for this right now? I said, oh, my husband, he doesn't care at all. And I've heard this before when we came back from Russia and I talked about the things, Sarah's changing, Sarah's learning, and I'm making space for the change, Sarah, in my life. I had so many women write me, call me, talk to me. My husband would never do that. My husband would never make room for me to change. In fact, when I try, he says, look, I married you this way. You got to be this way. Mm. If you want to see where anger comes up, that's where anger comes up for me. I want to say to guys, and I want to say to women of men who've had trauma and need to go through some stuff to be whole and need to change. And that means the marriage changes. So it's not just for men. It's for anybody that thinks like, I like things. I like a fawning wife or husband. I like all my needs being met by somebody. If you don't want your partner to be all that God's made them to be wholehearted about the way they live their life, about having as much of their joy as they help you have joy, if you're not in it as a partner, you're destroying yourself. You're only ruining what joy could be there for you. And you're probably so broken that you can't make space for a change, but then you go get help too.
Yeah.
If we can't offer one third of women who grew up in my generation were sexually assaulted by the time they were 18 years of age, they know that.
Yeah.
I would say less than a tenth of 1% of those women have ever had any trauma.
Yeah.
Now, how many men have had similar trauma from priests and pastors and all the stuff that's coming out now and from women in their life or teachers or whatever. Yes, men have, I'm not gender specific about trauma.
Yeah.
But I want to say if you love somebody who's broken and you don't want to make room for them, you don't want to change your life and schedule enough to be their cheerleader, to talk hours a day and give up your golf tournament or your football game or whatever to be there for your partner, you are missing one of the greatest joys of being human. I just want to say it that way. You're missing it. I wouldn't trade anything I've ever done for the hour I had with Sarah last night in her pain. I wouldn't trade it.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't hold on to anything I am, have been, enjoy, or love that it doesn't include Sarah's wholehearted participation. And that doesn't mean we need to do everything together. Sarah's like golf. Yeah. I don't like gardening. We don't, but I'll garden with her now. I'm learning gardening again. And it's not the gardening, it's the being with Sarah.
Yeah.
Sarah used to do all our grocery shopping. And the other day she said, I'm going to grocery store, you want to come with? She never invited me to come with.
That's because you're at her pace now.
There's so many good things.
You're moving at her pace.
Please, if you have a spouse who is Jesus is touching and wants to liberate, please make room for them. Make room for them. There's so much good for them, for you, for the world, for life. And man, I hate to see everything through a trauma lens now, but someone said to me the other day, what if, and this is the woman who kind of had a dream about Sarah that we may tell because I'll let it come up in Sarah's context. But she said the other day in a group that prays for the world, she said, what if Jesus was incarnated to rescue the world from the trauma that had consumed it? And to see sin as trauma, that really shifted something in my heart.
Yeah.
To see sin as trauma, to see how Sarah, and we haven't gotten into this, but I know it's messianic in some ways, but honestly, in those 3 weeks, I'm not hated by her, but I am abandoned and forsaken for no good reason to a woman I love with all my heart, right?
Yeah.
That reminds me of Father in a garden, Jesus on a cross, that this, and I had that thought when I'm there, you're holding the space I'm holding.
Yeah.
How to love what has abandoned you, forsaken you, loved them enough. So like the horse whisperer, you just stay in their sight line long enough till the horse decides, I'm going to walk over there and trust this guy a little bit. And I've watched Sarah come back, trust me a little bit, little bit. The other day she said to someone, asked her, if you put your marriage on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you say your marriage, state of your marriage today? And Sarah said 10. I actually thought, man, if I could get to 7, this might be awesome. She hit the 10. I'm going, gee, there's nowhere to go from there. Mm-hmm. And they said, give me one word that summarizes your feelings about Wayne right now. She said, safe. From 11, 12 weeks ago to being her Frankenstein, her monster.
Yeah.
To feeling absolutely safe with me. I always knew I was that guy. I knew that I was that guy 12 weeks ago. I knew there's not a safer place on the planet for Sarah to be than with me. Because I will literally do anything for that woman. She has suffered enough in her life. I'm not adding one bit of it that I know of intentionally. For her to say safe yesterday and did me, I want to be that.
Yeah.
I want to be that for every person around me. And I want for partners, I want you, if you have to go learn what it is to be a safe person for your hurting partner, learn that. You won't regret it.
Yeah. The two things that come to mind as you're talking about that is the first is just how unknowingly experience a much deeper understanding of the cross and the process that Jesus went through, right? Like he talks about in scripture about wanting us to know what it means to share in the cross with him. Like, what does that mean? What is the mystery of the cross?
Yeah.
And yet to the process that you've recently gone through with Sarah, I just hear that, you know, like the fact that, and then I think about, and I know you're not a superhero movie guy, but I think about the second Batman movie, is the third one. The whole point is he's like, I have enough strength for this season of time, I'm going to be the monster that they need to be able to put their stuff on. And I can hold that for them for a period of time, that I can be that. And like, I hear like even just the stuff that you navigated with Sarah, like you were able to quote unquote be the monster that Sarah needed you to be for a period of time so that she could feel safe. And now that's being reclaimed, that her love and her understanding and her picture of you is being reclaimed. And yet that's part of the resurrection process, right? Like he took on that stuff. He claimed that stuff. And yet there was an invitation to, I'll hold this for a period of time. I'll remove this from you as far as the East is from the West, but I want to give something back to you. I want to be that safe place for you. I want to be wholehearted life for you.
Yeah. The only difference would be I didn't choose to hold this.
No. You didn't.
I didn't choose to have it handed to me. I have held it. I even knew that if Sarah and I stayed apart, I would let her blame me. I knew she didn't need more blame in her life to ruin this marriage. So my heart was always for her saying, I did think about that scripture about he bore our reproach. You know, I look like the bad guy here. I know everybody knows Sarah. I tell people that every time we go out together and people meet Sarah, people are endeared to Sarah. If something's wrong in this relationship, people are going to know it's me. People are always going to choose Sarah's side. But I want that for her. I do. I want people to know this woman, she did a horrible, horrible thing for her own survival. That's why it was. We're seeing that now in incredible ways, and I'm thrilled with what she's becoming. I'm thrilled with the depth of relationship we share today. I have no idea how deeper this can get as Sarah finds more liberation from the trauma there, but I'm fully inside of it with her and so grateful.
Well, and I want to get into this more when Sarah's here with us too, but through this whole thing, because I've had some conversations with Sarah, just her and I talking on the phone, and then you and I talking, and then the three of us talking, and through this entire thing, both you and Sarah have held the same heart for one another, that I'm going to let Wayne paint the picture however he wants to paint it. If I need to be the bad guy, I know I can be the bad guy, and vice versa. Like, I will not reveal. I will not betray Sarah. I'm not going to expose her. I will honor her. I will be the bad guy. Like, this, you guys were having parallel hearts and parallel conversations, whether you even when you didn't know it, even when the two of you weren't in conversation and weren't in connection with one another, that relational bond that God had put in the two of you in your marriage remained true. Even when you didn't know if the marriage was going to make it, it remained
true. She's my dove.
Yeah.
And now we're going to finish out together. So I'm thrilled. She told me the other day too. She said, I want to assure you, to the best of my ability, I will always be honest with you and I will never leave you again. And I just kind of knew that already, but it's sweet. It's so sweet right now.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to just divesting ourselves of everything, putting everything we got in a little tiny car, and, well, it's not tiny, but we're just go.
It's a lot smaller than your house.
Yeah, your visit my son, and then keep going east as long as we go east, and then come back.
Yeah.
See what God shows us. See who there is to talk to. So if people want to get in line for the Wayne and Sarah Jacobson trauma tour, coming to a town near you, we might stop for dinner or something if you got it. And now we're 3 weeks past her leaving me. This has happened. I woke up on a Thursday morning the week you were coming, and I knew you were coming. And there were things that I wanted to talk about with you that I need to have more clarity on what's going on with Sarah. And so in a horse whisperer way, I just texted her saying, is there any way I could ask you a few questions, either by phone or text? And she said, yeah, go ahead. I said, phone? She said, text. Dang. And I said, well, Kyle's coming this weekend. So a couple of things about me and live stream and things I got to manage. What about this or this? And she just said, it's too early to talk about that. Okay. But we had this 45-minute exchange that was not about dogs and when she's showing up. It was about life. And the jewel was, you want me to stop caring about you? No. Have you stopped caring about me? No. And I'm just, okay, there's the first encouragement I have beyond these two stupid doves flying around here. And then I got off the phone call and my heart was joyful. It was buoyant. I felt, gosh, there's hope and you're coming. I don't have to get through another weekend by myself, which felt pretty good. And then about 3 hours later, you called me and you said, you're never going to believe this. And I said, what? I said, I just got off the phone with Sarah for an hour and a half. And she wants to sit down with you when I'm out there. Are you willing to do it? Oh my gosh.
Well, Sarah, knowing that I was coming out that weekend, what led you to the point where you felt like you were moving towards a space where you wanted to potentially reinitiate a conversation with Wayne, potentially reconnect? When I got your text message, I was like, okay, Lord, where is this going to go? And then you and I had, I mean, our conversation, like there were some things that I had been really holding in my heart about, like, no, this isn't, there's more going on here than meets the eye. Like, this is too complex. This doesn't align with who I know Sarah to be. So if she was taking these types of steps, something significant is going on. And just my heart went out to you and broke for you as well. And then to start to hear some of your story as we talked on the phone, what got you to that point? What was it that, can you verbalize that yet? Are you able to put words around that yet?
Well, I mean, we had the grandkids and it was a hard space. I know that if I had seen Wayne, he would be breaking down. I break down. I know I would have caved in. I probably would have I don't know. I was afraid that I was going to back up. I would have probably come back home, and I did all this, and I just knew I just didn't have it in me to be able to see him and talk to him. And even, you know, I was dropping dogs off and back and forth, and I just like, how can we go to baseball games? Or there was going to be a graduation coming up, a promotion for a granddaughter, and some other events for, you know, and I just like, how is this going to work? He's going to want to be there. I'm going to want to be there. And so somehow or other, in a text, Wayne had said that I could come and pick up, I guess, the dogs or something. He was going to be down at the airport and picking you up. So I had known ahead of that you were going to be coming, and that was just a couple days before I texted you. And part of me, it was, you know, we got to figure out a way to coordinate us being able to be together in order to be at these events. That was the main thing. And I think it was just God that just said to text you. And I was just like, and I toyed with that a while, and I just like, okay. And so then I text you, and then, well, you text right back pretty much quickly, and you want to talk. And I'm just like, and my heart sank, and I'm just like, and I was just like, I was torn, and I just like, but then I just, you know, I just did. There's certain things that I think it just, I didn't have God, you know, in my heart saying, feeling like I heard him say or have me do this. I just felt impressed to do it. It wasn't me, I know. And so if it's not me, it has to be him. And honestly, I do not remember what all we talked about. I don't. You probably remember more. I really don't. I just know at points you were in tears and you were understanding as I was saying and crying out. And I think I was crying. I do not remember. We talked a long time, but I don't remember all of what we were sharing. I just felt that you were somebody to be trusted when I text, and then when you were talking, I was like, well, you understand. Without even me sharing a lot of details, you were understanding. And that was comforting, gave me more trust.
Sarah, I did not know what to expect when I texted you and said, hey, can you talk? Again, it was one of those blessings of having that hour and a half, almost 2 hours of uninterrupted car time with decent cell service. And it was one of those weird situations where it was like, okay, Lord, I'm hearing Sarah, and there's a heart recognition of where she's at, and just a deep ache for where you're at as well. Like, there's just a recognition of that, and both of things that I'd worked through in my own past as well as things I was currently working through, and just an empathy for that space.
And you seem to understand without me even in explaining. I mean, it just, I don't know how, they were just, you just understood without even saying a lot of words necessarily. I did talk, but I mean, there was so much I didn't know then either, but I just knew of the pain that had been there for many months and had gone back a little bit off and on. So, like I say, you would be able to speak more of that conversation more than me, because I don't really remember.
One of the things that stuck out to me the most was that you and Wayne were having almost identical conversations with me about the other person. There, from both of your perspectives, in the conversations that I had with each of you independently, there was such an honoring of the other person and a desire to take the responsibility, to take the weight, to, if I need to be seen as the bad person, like I want to honor them. I want them to be able to tell the story. I don't want to betray their trust. I don't want to hurt them. I mean, those were the parallel conversations that the two of you were having independently as alongside of one another. And I just remember the first time that I was like, okay, there's definitely some hope here, was when Dwayne told me about the kitchen and like how you restocked for him. And I was like, man, that was an act of love. Like to be in the level of pain and crisis that you were in, and yet still to know your husband's heart well enough to say, I want to do this act of service as a genuine expression of my love, not a pandering, but a genuine, like, I want to know he's okay.
Yeah, I wanted to make it as easy as possible for him. Does that make sense?
Imagine that.
Only an authentic expression of love in the midst of very, very deep pain would say something like that.
Well, I mean, I'm shopping and I'm filling the cupboards and I'm making spaghetti and cookies, and even though I didn't put enough chocolate chips in them, but I mean, I'm buying his favorite candy and just...
I didn't volunteer that information. You asked if there were
I know.
Chocolate.
I know. He did not complain about that.
Not a bit.
But it's obvious which ones are in the freezer now, which ones are the ones...
Which were my abandonment cookies in, which are the ones I've helped put the chocolate chips in.
I mean, I wanted everything for Abby that he had. I had almost like a whole year of stuff ready for her. I mean, I cleaned the oven. I took his pants and to the dry cleaners. I was just trying to have everything, have him, you know, left him a bunch of cash so he didn't have to go to the bank. And, you know, what else would I have done? I mean, I just, in my mind, I think with what I was doing, I mean, I just, that doesn't make sense either, does it?
I still haven't figured out what to do with the cash. Well, I haven't even touched it.
That was the thing that kept resonating with me, Sarah, as we talked, as I heard Wayne process those things, because I've been a part of other situations where they just leave. They don't consider the other person. They don't, there's no, I want to make this easier for them. It's just, this has been painful. This has been awful. I have to get out and they can deal with it. Like they'll sort it out on the other side. That has been the process. And so to hear the level of attention to detail that you went through in preparation for this, because I can't even imagine how difficult that was for you as you were going through that, as you were doing that.
You know, all I could do to survive was just do, I'm notorious for lists and what needs to be done. And that's where I focus. I just have to do this. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, it's just the next thing. What is the next thing I do? What is the next thing I do? Yeah, I don't even know how I did it. I don't know how I, driving off, sometimes, those moments sometimes bring back a lot of emotions that haven't probably been totally processed through, maybe.
Well, and I think that's very understandable. I mean, the fact that we're sitting here in the time that we are, whether anybody hears this or not, and that you're able to dialogue together sitting in the same room, I mean, we're sitting in a miracle. The odds, literally, you each had professionals in mental health tell you that the odds of this happening was what, less than 1%, right? Yeah. That's like, really, Lord? Like, okay, Father. Like, in some, like, I know that this has been an incredibly painful and challenging process for both of you, but it's like, wow. the extent that the Father's healing hand can come into a situation and create radical change just continues to blow me away.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com or add your voice by calling our comment line at 805-539-6980.